Welcome to the PPC show. I am Paul Wicker.
And I'm JD Prater.
And I'm Joe Martinez.
What? And Joe Martinez.
Whoa. You weren't expecting that, were you?
May 1st and things have changed. These are your top headlines in marketing with the three of us this week. Thanks for coming on, Joe. How is life in your basement?
You know, it seems like this is my break time when I'm not teaching the kids their school lessons. So I'm looking forward to summer break really bad.
Yeah, I hear they might move up school start. Everybody in California, at least, there's a rumor that school might start in July and parents are cheering.
Yeah. One of my clients in California told me that. I was like, I would kill for that right now.
Right. Just you probably buy a small house somewhere and just do it.
Oh, man. That's actually news to me. So you guys are seeing me react in real time, which looks like this.
Yes.
Yes. This is very exciting.
Get him out of the house.
You can imagine what JD looks like right now. Hopefully you guys can hear me okay. I did my first hosting of like one of these game nights where you have to use Zoom. And then I was running Steam. And with Steam, I was playing the game Jackbox. And Jackbox has a bunch of games you could play, like Drawful. So it's kind of a big technical setup. And you have to like play it on your screen, share your screen, and then everybody, you know, logs in the Zoom. But you need the audio from the game. So I had my, what I usually use for podcasting, mic kind of set up to capture the audio. So hopefully my audio is not terrible, but it was for a good cause.
You lost me after Zoom. I have no idea what any of that is.
I was waiting for, like, it got so crazy during Zoom game night that you broke it and now you have to settle for your lesser mic. I was really hoping for that story.
Yeah, like your voice is gone. I was right. You broke your leg. I was waiting for something.
Oh, no. Started at 7, done by 9 p.m. And we're like, okay, that was fun. Everybody had a few drinks. And
the next day, it was rowdy, guys.
Okay, well, let's cover some headlines while we're at it. So first story we have is from Search Engine Land, and this was a great article by Ginny where she really did a nice roundup of the, to use our own term, the revenue roundup.
Revenue roundup.
All the different tech companies. Facebook, Google, Twitter, Snap. So as you imagine, everybody's March was a big dump. And despite that, because January and February had a lot of growth, most folks kind of came out flat. But of the different tech companies, I don't know, JD, Joe, either of you jump in here. Did anything stand out at you?
So I think here's what I liked about it, right? Headline, have we hit rock bottom? And like that's the question I think we're all asking, right? I mean, Joe's going to be able to chime in better than I can as far as on the agency side, right? I mean, I can come from more of an ad network and say that ours is pretty much in line with what others are seeing as well. We can't confirm nor deny that anything has happened. But no, it's actually not too far off. And I think one of the things that this article does chime in is like performance marketing was really the ones that like stayed, whereas like the brand marketing is really what took the hit. And then if you go further into like different verticals, right? So again, core, we don't have retail, we don't really have travel, right? And so we were somewhat unaffected. I mean, we were affected, right? But when you look at a lot of these, it really was like brand marketing and then those specific verticals that took a hit. The biggest ones that surprised me was somehow Snap. Good gosh. Did you guys see that? Like revenue increased 44% year over year.
Yeah.
Yeah. To 462 million. And really everyone in this article, Snap, Microsoft, Twitter, Google, Facebook, all had really good January, Februarys with some good growth. And then March, just kind of their businesses fell dramatically and ended up kind of like flat or still growing. Like Facebook still grew 17% year over year, just not what you're used to seeing from them. Google still grew 10% year over year to 33 billion. So despite COVID, March couldn't kind of drag down Q1. The question is Q2, you know? So April is now obviously the first month in the next quarter. Are we going to see another quarter of flat? I don't want to say flat growth, but a flat quarter because we don't have a January, February. And that's what, you know, that's what I'm seeing in a lot of these numbers is that we're kind of expect flat for a while.
Yeah, it's from our experience, it's kind of been all over the board with just having a variety of clients we do. I do like that the article talked about the feast or famine nature of the crisis, because we definitely saw that. So at our agency, we had travel agency client, you know, they're shut off, completely shut off with no idea of when they can return. We have other clients, some in the healthcare industry, some other products that people would like during this time that are absolutely capitalizing on the situation. So some are growing and we've turned their budgets up. We have the client that I said it was more of a product. It was a product that they capitalized initially, like sold out on Amazon within like a week after stuff started shutting down. Couldn't get fulfillment because then Amazon switched up, you know, how the priority of how they were shipping. But then it was a product that we're starting to realize that people hoard it. They panic bought it, and now they don't need it for a while. So now they're starting to see that go down. So even if people were seeing a good initial increase, not everybody's going to maintain that increase. It kind of really depends on what that product is. But we are starting to see from some of our SaaS clients that they just needed time to kind of reposition either their marketing or their product. And they're starting to slowly turn campaigns back on. So we're starting to see it level off, especially now that talks of a lot of things reopening around the country, that we're seeing those campaigns and ad spend turn back on. It's not to where it was in all of Q1, but it's definitely more than what we've had in the past, you know, couple weeks. And then ones that were completely had to shut off for a while, they're starting to come back.
Well, that's great to hear. Some of the quotes from the article, Google said, the good news is that in April, search had not seen further declines in year-over-year revenue. So April looked pretty flat. And then also IAB did a survey, and they said that buyers expected digital ad budgets to be cut by about 33% on average for the second quarter. So the coming quarter overall still expect March continued with obviously, like Joe, you're pointing out, these like pockets of success or this like these spikes, right? Like if things spike up, they might spike down if everybody's like, okay, we got enough toilet paper for like 3 years now. So what am I going to do?
I see a lot of advertisers too. I mean, this is on our end, really kind of switching to more mid funnel, upper funnel too. They're no longer asking for the demo necessarily. They're really kind of positioning themselves as a thought leader in the space and saying, hey, check this out. We put together this like resource hub to help you, you know, capitalize on that. And they're just driving traffic to it. Now there's some like webinars in there. I'm sure there's, you know, there's some gated content, but they're really driving more to this hub. And I think something that I've been impressed with is you wonder why so many like successful companies are successful. Being on this side, it's how fast and agile they moved. 100%. Like watching this on this end, you're like, oh, that's why you're a billion-dollar company. Look how fast your marketing team turned this around, moved things around. You got your design, and you've already updated all your campaigns within like, you know, 7 to 10 days. It's been super impressive.
Yeah, we had a client who's pretty much in that line. You know, their main call to action was the demo, you know, really pushing the demo. They completely switched to a webinar series, just getting people in the door, again, more top of funnel, that type of action, but they're still capturing leads and they're still closing business from this. And they're seeing that it works. And it's like they're being the solution, they're being the asset that people need in this time. And it's like, oh, it's working. The part I laugh about it is, you know, this kind of brand building and awareness building, it works when there's not a pandemic going on too, guys. So it's amazing. We just need like some sort of tragedy to happen that people actually start focusing on full funnel marketing.
It's true, man. It's like also like that like trust aspect. I think people are looking for like a trusted advisor right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the brands that are delivering that are definitely winning. So
yeah, there's a lot of really dark examples I won't bring up of about tragedy often is the impetus for change. There's someone who I won't name was just telling me that the plague in Europe killed, obviously, I forget the number, some giant percentage of like Europe, 20% or something like that. But there's a lot of people that say because of that, like all of the old ways of thinking were kind of thrown out because they didn't have a workforce anymore. There's a lot of the poor people who died. So it like changed the way you had to train and view labor. And it like changed some of the power structures, which they think led to the Enlightenment. So I'm not saying, you know, COVID is the modern plague. We're far from wiping out 20% or whatever the number is. But these things often happen. Tragedy strikes. In the beginning, we kind of deal with the panic and the, you know, the health side of it and the loss and the fear. And then when you come out the other end, hopefully you come out, you know, a lot stronger. So
yeah, man, we're seeing people invest in different marketing strategies. We're getting them to test new channels where they can do some cool branding from it. And now they're starting to see like, oh, these are great channels. Like, I'll admit, I haven't used Twitter ads a lot. But when we're looking for some, like, how do we reach this new audience we're trying to target? We tried to pull open every channel we could. I looked at Twitter ads. And I was like, I didn't realize they had some of this targeting option here. I was like, okay, I need to start using this in even some other clients. So it's kind of opening our eyes to different ways that we need to market ourselves and actually see clients embrace that now. It is kind of rejuvenating a bit in this industry.
Yeah, it reminds me a famous quote from Andy Groves, right, back at Intel. And he said, bad companies are destroyed by crises. Good companies survive them. Great companies are improved by them. So kind of building off what Paul was saying there.
The next story I want to move on to, and I know, Joe, I think you're going to give us some really wise elements that you've extracted from this top things PPC advertisers are saying or something like that. I read it, and the only thing I managed to take away from this article from Search Engine Journal was Fred Valley's doing a one-handed push-up against the wall while putting a shirt on. Like, what the fuck, Fred? What are you doing, buddy?
Yeah. He, like, challenges me to do it as if I can do that. Are you kidding me? Like, and then to, like, video myself doing that? Like, nah, I'm good, man.
There was a one-handed push-up shirt challenge?
Yeah, it's called the handstand challenge. You not heard about this?
God.
You know that that Spider-Man actor, I guess, challenged Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds to it, and then it, you know, spread. And then he's like, yeah, look at me doing it. I'm like, Fred, why is your shirt off and why are you so ripped?
I know. Well, then I'm like, so clearly this is just people in shape with need an excuse to share a video of themselves.
I like having my neck in one piece, so I won't try it.
To be honest, I tried it. It's not as hard as you think it is. But I thought about, here's what I thought about responding with. You guys, I was going to leave my shirt on as it should stay on. And I was going to put on a hoodie. Oh.
Right. Yeah. I see what you're doing.
You see what I did?
That's
okay.
Next level game.
This actually makes me feel like Fred isn't that crazy. Because when I saw it with none of that context, I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? And why is this in a video about a webinar? I've been to these webinars, by the way. He's, you know, Fred's doing a series of like what's going on in PPC during COVID. And they're pretty good. He brings on different folks. I think Jeff from Hennepin was on one. Mm-hmm.
And I did it a week ago.
Oh, yes. So I'll go watch that one. But yeah, so tell us about it. What's going on there?
It's very opinion-based. You know, it's kind of because we all know we come from different backgrounds, you know, different experiences. So we're just kind of giving out just what we're seeing, kind of similar to what we talked about or what I just talked about with our agency and how people have been adapting to it. I know one of the topics is just one of the very early topics. It might have been the first episode was the transition from working remote, since a lot of people, that was brand new to them. So it wasn't necessarily on tactical advice on the accounts. It was more kind of just what we're seeing right now personally in each of us, just to get a variety of opinions. And it was almost like a town hall. That's why he calls it a town hall meeting. It's just a public forum, open topics. People are asking questions. If it could be account specific, it could just be about life, PPC life in the COVID world in general. So it's kind of just been a cool open format. We can just get our voices out there.
Yeah, I came across this quote and I really liked it. It said, don't sound like a used car salesman. Be your customer's partner in solving a problem. Joe Martinez.
Yes. That was it.
Yeah. Was that Andy Grove at Intel? Oh, no. It was Joe Martinez.
No. Yeah. Was that Andy Grove? Yeah. No.
About the same.
Yeah.
Right. About the same impact on technology.
Yeah. Who?
Great. Well, tune into that. It is very, I read the article. It's very like, Optimizer has a script for this. Optimizer has a script for that. But his scripts are good.
They are good.
I mean, if you're doing AdWords, his stuff is good. Him and Brad, I think, both their products, if you're deep in AdWords, are good products. So my plug for them. Anything else you want to talk about, or should we move on to the Facebook stock? Because JD and I were horribly wrong last week, and we need to apologize.
Yes.
I want to hear the apology.
The book.
Right. Are you saying we should apologize for all the talking about books we did? Because that's also true. We're talking about books way too long. Sorry. We took some bets, or we gave some recommendations on the Facebook stock going down, certainly not breaking 200. And of of course, Facebook stock came out, and instead it rose 10% and broke 200. Even today, when the market's been down, it's still over, I think it's like 204, something like that. So we were both wrong. The stock went up. So apparently people had already factored in the flat quarter and everybody was fine.
I mean, they were factoring in our advice is really what it comes down to. Wow. I mean, geez, really, Facebook? Like, unbelievable. Like, you basically is like a, let's just call it 3 billion people. Like, that's just a rounding error at like 2.99 billion across all, you know, platforms. Like, it's just a ton of people. And I think I was trying to look it up. I think I found like 4.5 billion people are on the internet. So roughly 70% of people are on Facebook that have access to the internet.
Right, on a Facebook product.
Facebook product,
of course.
Yes.
Snapchat.
Sorry, the Facebook company.
Yeah, right. Did they split between the actual channel itself and what people are actually using?
Yeah, if you go in the actual numbers, they break down like YouTube and WhatsApp. And of course, we've talked about in the past, it's been a while because it's been so COVID-y, but we used to talk about how they might break them into three businesses, or the FCC might force them into three businesses, and they've been hard at work, like stitching them very deeply together to keep those businesses together. And then the number, I guess, what is it? $17.74 billion was Q1. So, and there was one number I found interesting, because I'm always talking about VR taking over the world. Although if COVID did not lead to an increase, I shouldn't just say an increase, a skyrocketing of VR, I don't think anything will. So I think I'm very wrong on VR is coming. But Portal and Oculus, which are owned by, of course, Facebook, also grew 80% year over year to $300 million. So at many companies, I mean, a $300 million business would be oh my God, we grew a $300 million business. But of course, when that's part of $17.4 billion, no one cares. But
That's pretty good. I mean, you could easily go public on $300 million. That's
with 80% year over year growth. Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So wow. Yeah.
Maybe I'm not that wrong.
Yeah. But the thing is, with the Oculus, I'm still like, how are you making money off this? I mean, I get it. You sell the headsets. Like what else though? Like, I mean, do they have their own games and everything too?
But they're the platform. Yeah, it's like Xbox, right? They might get a percentage of titles sold on the platform, okay. But. I did use, I don't know if it was Oculus or it was whatever PlayStation View or whatever PlayStation has. I played my first VR game. I got horribly nauseous within 10 minutes.
Really?
I was like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Super nauseous. And like in the game, I felt myself getting nauseous and I was like, it's like getting car sick.
Yeah.
Like you feel it. I don't know if you ever get car sick. And you're like, I'll be fine. So I'm just going to kind of muscle through. And then when I was done and I took off the thing, I was like, oh, my God. I had to, like, sit down for 5 minutes. I'm like, I might puke.
I'd be the person who'd lose my balance.
Yeah. I get that way on Disney rides, so I don't think VR is for me.
Yeah, that small world is crazy.
JD's in the corner puking. I didn't see the whatever pops out at you from France land.
France land. Wow.
I'm mixing up Epcot.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
I don't know. It's been about 15 years. I haven't been to a Disney property in a very long time. More news from Facebook is, okay, we're talking about the stock. The stock price is up. If you are on Facebook right now, prices are just wacky. So CPCs are way down while impression volume is way up. So if you're one of those people spending, you're in really good shape.
That is something we saw where, going back to the clients who were capitalizing on the time, they saw the exact opposite. People who knew they could capitalize it, our CPMs and CPCs noticeably went up. But then now they're starting to level off again. But I think for the most part, those were the few and far betweens. There was a lot of clients who upped their brand game because they were getting more impressions, more visibility, more traffic, and they were spending less than they were in previous months.
Yeah, apparently over for all Facebook, ad impressions were up 39% and price per ad declined by 16%. But to your point, I mean, factor in travel went from, $10 a click for a flight to New York to zero.
Yeah.
So to your point, it might have been a lot of declines where nobody is going to advertise anyway, but a lot more impressions because people are sitting home scrolling through Instagram a lot more.
And one thing I wish I would have looked up before this was the frequency. I need to circle back now and double check the frequency and see if those numbers skyrocketed and people are now seeing your ad 30 times instead of 7.
Right. How do you feel about, as someone running a lot of campaigns right now, how do you feel about frequency? Do you like it high or do you like to cap it?
I personally cap it because I think it from a personal experience. If you're looking at from just like brand frequency, to me that's one thing. I like to look at it as an individual asset, creative asset itself, because there can be a piece of creative that can just not really resonate with someone right away. But if you get them in that next stage, or you just, okay, now I'm going to test something new and hit them with something different, you never know if that second piece of creative can make a difference. So I know some people are like, no, like only 3 times a week. And I was like, most people are going to forget that. They're not even going to see that. I think you need to hit people a little bit harder and test it out until you start seeing some sort of flat line.
I think very wise advice in terms of reach and frequency, specifically frequency. I want to move on to Spotify because they had a lot of good data about podcasts. So we're on a podcast. You're listening to a podcast. Spotify invested quite a bit of money in building their kind of podcast inventory, and their numbers are up. Even though podcasting is slightly down, like people listening to music went up. So people commuting and podcasts went down. People sitting at home listening to music with their family went up. So overall, Spotify is doing very well. They're up to 130 million paid subscribers in the quarter, up 31% year over year, and almost $2 billion in revenue in Q1. So Spotify doing very well. And despite podcast listening going down, what I really should say, not growing as fast as expected. So it's still growing 19% in terms of MAUs on folks listening to podcasts. That went up 19%.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
How do you guys listen to podcasts? Do you actually, do you go to a Spotify channel?
No. I listen to it on my phone.
Yep.
But what do you use, JD?
I have an iPhone, so I use Apple Podcast.
You're just saying it so matter-of-factly. Like, I have an Apple product, therefore I use the Apple product.
Do you know who I am? I'm obviously an Apple guy.
And Joe, how about you? What do you listen to your podcasts on?
Yeah, if I'm in the car, it'll be Apple Podcasts and stuff that's already pre-downloaded. And then if I'm on desktop, it's just if I see it on social, like if you guys are tweeting it out, I'll click on it and just listen through it via the player from whatever page you guys have it on. To me, if like I'm from there already, why would I need to go to another platform to listen to it if it's on your page and you're linking directly to it?
I use Google Podcasts. I forget the name of it, but you couldn't download ahead of time. And I had, you know, when I go for a run now, turns out I get no signal when I run up this mountain behind my house, so that became a problem. So I started using Spotify, and because you could download, there's offline mode. So look at that. We all do something. Well, you guys are similar, but it's a little bit different. And we know Spotify is not number one in podcasting, but it's, even if they only have 10% of the market, you know, it's massive now. And they are, so, and they have an ad business. And actually, the CEO of Spotify, Daniel Ek, I think is how you say his name. Spotify is what, Swedish?
I think
that's Scandinavian.
Right. No,
I think they're Swedish.
Yeah, I think Swedish is right. Yeah.
And they said they're better positioned than others in media because they only get 10%. Of their revenue from advertising.
I know.
So most of it is subscription, and then they only have 10% coming in from things like podcast advertising.
But that's still like 200 million.
Right. I know. Yeah, it's hard with these big numbers to forget. Yeah. So also that's where they get their money from, which is great. You know, and that model, obviously the recurring revenue model with subscriptions is working for them, but they're still doing 10%, which probably comes from placements. Because they bought a company called Anchor, and amazingly, we use Anchor to distribute our podcast. In fact, they're going to sponsor today's episode. So right now, we're going to tell you all about the benefits of Anchor. We are back from break. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Let's talk about Etsy. I almost brought this up earlier because you were talking about companies that respond quickly during COVID really stand apart and found a way to, some of them thrive in this time of crisis. And Etsy is a great example. When this all started going down, Etsy sent out a push notification that said, calling all sellers, start making face masks. And over the weekend, like everybody in their Etsy network started making face masks. And now they're selling like hundreds of thousands of face masks. And like Etsy is just on fire in a good way. Like the number of sales are up, number of sellers are up. So it's a great example of someone that's done exactly what you were saying.
Yeah, super smart.
From the local business perspective, we're seeing a lot of companies shift. You know, we there's a girl I went to high school with who has her own, you know, artisanal like soap and fragrance shop and everything, and she shifted to hand sanitizer and face mask, and I see her Facebook, Instagram posts every day, and she's sold out like every day. So it's a great adaptation. Clearly, that's the same market that's on Etsy.
I mean, like, these numbers don't lie either. I mean, this is huge. Like, 130,000 new sellers in April. So, I mean, not only did, like, people buy, but, like, they were attracting, you know, new people. And this is, like, whenever Shopify is growing like gangbusters, right? The whole, like, D2C movement, right? And then you see the number of items sold on Etsy this April increased 98% year over year, and it was 27% higher than December, which, you know, is Christmas season, right? And
right.
Like, wow, really good job.
And their stock price is being rewarded. So, you know, their stock is floating around like $65 mark for quite a while, crashed with everything else, but quickly bounced right back up. And now their stock's right back to where it was before COVID because of their quick response. And the fact that they attracted so many new sellers and have done so many in sales.
Well, then Etsy, like a year ago, didn't they like change their policies on the payment systems that their sellers had to use? So you had to use the Etsy one, and then they took a bigger cut from that as well. So like, yeah, of course they want people to sell more stuff because they're just going to make out for it. It's at the time, I know a lot of Etsy sellers that were really mad with the changes that Etsy made about a year or so ago. But from a business side, that's making money for them, obviously.
Yeah, that's the dirty little secret in transactions, right? Is that you can take a percentage of the transaction from the credit card fees. And if you're big enough, obviously you can talk to the payment processors to get lower fees. And then, in theory, pass those through to your sellers or take a percentage for yourself.
Yeah.
That's a great business. I mean, it's why we see everybody trying to get into transactions like Facebook and Libra and really trying to move into transactions and WhatsApp, because it's a great business to be in, because there's like an invisible fee that people don't even really care about, because they're like, oh yeah, it's like a processing fee. It's almost like sales tax. But we also covered the story on Etsy. They also were taking a percentage of the fee you pay and putting it into Google ads, and you like couldn't opt out. And everybody was kind of freaking out about, I'm paying like X percent for Google ads and I don't know what I'm getting and I'm not selling anymore. And so they've had a few misses, but this probably wipes all that out, I would think, for a lot of sellers if you're doing really well.
Yeah, I think the real key here was the very like last sentence of the article. If you made it down this far, while on Amazon search results are sold out, on Etsy there's an endless list of small stores ready to make them. So if you're seeing long wait times on Amazon, go check out Etsy. You never know, you might be able to get it within the next week.
Yeah, there was a stat I wrote down too. Face masks right now is the most searched term on both Etsy and Amazon. And to your point, you do it on Amazon, there's nothing left, but yeah. Etsy's got plenty of inventory.
How much is toilet paper on Etsy?
What?
Let's press our own toilet paper. It can be done.
No? you can use some really cool designs, I'm sure.
Right. All right. Get to work. Cancel the podcast. Homegrown toilet paper.
And this next segment is brought to you by Charmin.
Right. Custom toilet paper. Yeah. So we're talking about e-commerce. You can't not talk about Amazon. This was a huge story in the Wall Street Journal about them using data from people that sell on their platform to copy their products and bring copycat Amazon branded products to market. And this has been kind of talked about for a long time. It's like Amazon will do this to you. I think the Swell water bottles were kind of the poster child for this like a year ago. There started being all these like imitations, and even Amazon had a version that looked exactly like the Swell water bottle, even though it was supposed to be trademarked. Although, you know, after reading this, I'm not clear if Amazon's doing something wrong, but certainly if everything alleged in this Wall Street Journal article is true, it's kind of shady. So,
yeah, it was like, no, we don't do that. What? No, we don't look at sales. What? We don't look at this, you know, store data to figure out what we should, you know, white label, private label build. No, we don't do that. That would be against all of our, you know, ethics and violate policies. And yet, doesn't everyone do this? You know what I mean? Like, I just assumed that they did. So this was like no real surprise to me. I mean, I think we've seen on the ad tech side, like Facebook does this all the time. You could be a third, you know, you could be like a business partner with them, have a really great product that's doing really cool stuff, innovative stuff, and they're just like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. I'll just copy that. It's like I do Snap, right? I mean, it's it's just what they do.
Old clients I've had in the past where one was put out of business within 6 months because Amazon saw their product. It was completely unique. They came up with their own formula, undercut it by like, you know, a couple percentage points. It was always the cheaper option. And 6 months, the company was gone.
Wow, really? 6 months?
6 months.
Jeez.
Yeah, Amazon's private label has 45 brands with 243,000 products that include Amazon Basics, which we probably all bought, those batteries, to their brand Stern & Beam. Yeah, the batteries are pretty terrible, but they're just, you know, the same factory that makes the crappy Duracell. You know, so, but yeah, they have tons of brands and then tons of products. And what's kind of unique is they finally had almost like a whistleblower. They have some folks who came forward and said, hey, we know we weren't supposed to look at this data, but the quote was, at the same time, we were making Amazon branded products and we want to sell them. I mean, put yourself in their shoes if you're like, hey, I, you know, Jeff Bezos wants me to make a top selling, you know, water bottle. What do you do? Well, what do you, in any business, what do? You go look at the top competitors and say, well, what makes that product so special? If you're at Amazon, you happen to know their sales volume, and you know maybe there's some other things you can figure out about the company because you're Amazon. And then one example, they said, in one instance, Amazon employees accessed documents and data about a best-selling car trunk organizer, included total sales, how much the vendor paid Amazon for marketing and shipping, and how much Amazon made on each sale. So that if you can get somebody's profit margins, that makes your business planning a lot easier.
Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, this is how much money we can make. Plus, we're Amazon, so we could probably negotiate a much better rate. Pretty shady stuff. Although, if we talk about Pivot, the other podcast on almost every one of our podcasts,
always.
Scott Galloway would just say, well, this is what happens when you have an unregulated monopoly
that
runs the entire retail ecosystem that has now just turned into the fulfillment arm for the U.S. economy as, you know, the federal government kind of just spun in circles as we all try to figure out how to like get food into our homes and continue to get things like toilet paper. So,
and Amazon already has their shops within the Kohl's department stores, the brick and mortar ones. They have that partnership with Kohl's. So, I mean, they already have, you know, top Amazon products there. They can easily just start putting their own stuff there and making money.
And Amazon Go stores in San Francisco, there's these new stores you walk into. They're almost like convenience stores, kind of like high-end convenience stores, a lot of food. Basically, and you just walk in, grab what you want, put in your bag, walk out. It's totally touch free, which, hey, in COVID times, wouldn't it be nice if like all you do is walk in, grab what you're going to eat and walk out?
Have you done
never
it?
Never touch anything. Yeah. Yeah, you bring up the app on your phone and it's a QR code.
Okay.
You hold it up in front of like a little gate and it lets you in. And then they put RFIDs in all the products. So as you just pick them up and move them, they're tracking you and they have your app running. And then when you walk out, it just says, okay, you've shopped in, you know, 1 minute, 14 seconds, you bought these three things, and it's always been accurate. And they partnered with like local restaurants. So it's not just like crappy Amazon, although the crappy Amazon brands are there, but it also has like all the overpriced local San Francisco restaurants. Well, kind of the grab and go type restaurants, not like high end restaurants, but like the same grab and go type stuff you would see in some of the upscale San Francisco lunch spots. So they're taking over the world at Amazon.
Could you be like, oh, I actually didn't want this. Can I put it back?
You know, I've never tried to go back in, but you can put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
Like when you're in, you can touch and move things around. It doesn't matter. As long as you don't walk out with it.
Got it.
It's not like the hotel bar. if you move it, so, oh, you bought it. Like, but I didn't drink it. I might have filled it with water after I drank the bottle.
Yeah.
All right. We have one more story we'll get to. It's a pretty tactical one, but it's from our friend Michelle, Michelle SEM. About the Facebook ads placement strategies. And I read it and I thought it was a really good article. So I wanted to share it quickly. You know, if you're doing Facebook ads, you can optimize, or I shouldn't say you could optimize. You can view your performance by placement. And then if you want to, you can start kind of segmenting your strategy by placement. It seems obvious, but as this article talks about, a lot of people don't do it. So they just treat all placements the same. And as you know, like, newsfeed is very different, and stories and Instagram and, you know, these worlds are different. The formats are different. So if you have time and the kind of the TLDR of the articles, like, start with everything turned on, see what performs best, and then learn. And then based on that, like, pick and choose which placements you should spend more time optimizing, because that's where you're getting most of your traffic or your conversions, et cetera. So that was a good practical article.
We know a lot of people are shifting because you can update creatives by channel, and everyone thinks like, oh, that's good enough. I can do that. Here you go. I have a different image for Instagram than I do for Facebook. I did it. I was like, I'm not saying that won't improve anything ever. Yes, it will, but you can't go deeper. And you know, we shifted some stuff of gotten some clients in, and we reviewed some counts, and they've always shut off Facebook Messenger all the time, habitually. And like, why are you guys doing that? And it's like, oh, we just figured, it's not going to work. We just know it's not going to work. It's like, well, let's try it. And then sometimes you realize, you get surprised, wow, it actually does convert fairly well. It actually converts better, and sometimes that we see, than your Facebook desktop ad. So it's, you don't know until you try it and see it. And it's really easy to split these things out and exclude certain placements. So why not make sure something consistently works or doesn't work, so you're optimizing for the actual best performance?
Well said. Good advice. And I also just realized we never said where you're from, Joe. I don't know if we should like give an agency plug for you. Is that just like a nice thing to do?
I am from Clicks Marketing. So Michelle Morgan, who wrote this Search Engine Journal article, she is my coworker and my YouTube channel partner. See, like, I got that in there too.
Right. You guys have a YouTube channel. So that, I thought you were married because you did a YouTube channel together. And I made this weird assumption that, like, that must be the case. And then I suddenly realized, well, me and JD do the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We're certainly not married. So I guess people can do social media together. I want to thank you for coming on today. It's been a lot of fun. And I think you gave us a lot of perspective that we don't normally have when JD and I are just up here making shit up. So
hey,
thank you for coming on.
That's all right. It's good to catch up with you guys. Love being on the show.
If you guys want to hear more, you could always head over to, well, sure. For now, you can still head over to blog.adstage.io, and you can sign up for the blog and get the newsletter and get all the links to the podcast. And we will be migrating some things. Last episode, we talked about AdStage was acquired by TapClick. We need to figure out our future distribution. So we'll keep sending this out the same old ways, but maybe one day we'll have a website or something. We got to send somebody to people somewhere. I don't know. Or a rebrand? How about a rebrand? If you have any good ideas for a rebrand, go ahead and tweet JD or I. If you have good ideas for a rebrand.
Paid media experts.
Paid media experts.
Or pro paid.
I know what he's doing. I know exactly what he's doing. He's trying to hinder the YouTube channel brand name.
Oh, I see. I see. We're just trying to steal all your traffic.
Yep.
Well, if you have any good future podcast names or ideas, just let us know. Have a good week, everybody. And give a little goodbye.
Oh, bye.
See you guys.